This is one of these situations when you have a former graduate student who leaves the country and decides she's going to attend the meeting and then can't come. It might be partially payback because I've been sitting on some of her manuscripts, but I just received this presentation Friday, so please bear with me and keep that in consideration when you start asking questions. So this is some work that was done probably 5 or 6 years ago, and it was done on fairly, low-tech cultural methods compared to some of the things that you've already heard about this morning. But of course, when you have a cultured organism, you have something tangible that you want, that you need to work with if you're looking at functions and activities. So, thank you. On this particular study, we're looking at soybean, particularly those that are transgenically modified, the Roundup Ready cultivars versus the conventional non-modified genetic non-modified soybean variety. So this is a little background. That acreage harvested in 2006 actually isn't too much different than what we have this year. I think it was around below 80,000 or 80 million acres, which would translate about that hectareage. Now, the transgenic soybean is, as you know, genetically resistant to glyphosate. It's probably more than 90% used in the soybean production in the U.S., and I would say that global figure is probably higher now with some of the expansion of the glyphosate-resistant soybean acreage in the last few years. That just gives you a visual of the global area of the biotech crops. Obviously, the soybean modified for glyphosate resistance is the most popular transgenic crop at this point. And herbicide tolerance is the leading trait that is being planted worldwide. You all are probably familiar with glyphosate. The main trait that I want to point out is that it is an inhibitor of the EPSP synthase, which is a critical enzyme at the point that inhibits shikimate formation or the beyond shikimate metabolism, which is critical for the metabolism synthesis of aromatic amino acids and other aromatic compounds involved in phytoalexin, flavonoid signaling activity, and those types of structures. So it's a very critical point that is inhibited in plants. The glyphosate resistant soybean has the particular ESPSP synthase that is insensitive to glyphosate. Why are we interested in that? Well, if you look in the rhizosphere, which is the point of a lot of release and exudation of different compounds into the rhizosphere, affects the rhizosphere microbial community. We also know that, I wouldn't have put that in this sequence, but we also know that among the other compounds or materials that are released into the rhizosphere include some of these systemic type compounds, synthetic compounds that are systemic within the plant, and that includes glyphosate. It will eventually make its way into the rhizosphere. Now, does that have an effect on the microbial community and the biological activity of the organisms in the rhizosphere? That was the main point of doing this. This would have made a lot nicer, more informative presentation, because one of the things that Sue did was collect a large number of isolates from the rhizosphere and had these taxonomically identified. And many of these are familiar to you that are high producers of this particular growth regulator, indole-3-acetic acid or auxin. But what is interesting is that a few of these were unusual, and if you look at the one about the third from the bottom, the Filobacterium rubiaceae arum, that is a sort of a symbiotic bacteria that is often found in leaf nodules, often in tropical plants, including the mangrove species. We found several of these isolates in the soybean rhizosphere, which I'm not sure that might be the first time that had been documented. And they are very huge producers of IAA, up to 100, 10 to 100 more times some of the other isolates that you see there. And really, if we would have looked at, we did look at the effect of glyphosate on the actual production, the levels of these, that would have made a nicer story, because what you'll see is not going to be all that interesting, I guess, but or all that informative. But that just gives you an idea of some of the diversity that we found in the soybean rhizosphere, whether it was transgenically modified or not. And this is a schematic showing the systemic activity of glyphosate. It tends to, even though that it's used as a weed management tool, it does contact the growing soybean plant. So it has to move throughout the soybean. Even though it may not affect the enzyme, it tends to go towards growing points, meristematic tissue, pod filling in the seeds. We find it in nodules, and it eventually makes its way into the rhizosphere as it is exuded through the roots. So rhizobacteria, microorganisms, and other bacteria do come in contact with glyphosate in the rhizosphere. So her hypothesis was this may affect IA-producing rhizobacteria through the change in the balance of the organic carbon and oxygen that is released into the rhizosphere. IA-producing bacteria are very important, of course, for root growth, plant growth, but also interacting with the other microorganisms in the rhizosphere. Some recent work has shown that some of the pseudomonads that produce IA are very important in interacting with rhizobia that are in the nodulation and nitrogen fixation process in some of these legumes. This was basically a greenhouse experiment. We looked at one soil type, but we looked at it as a cultivated, from a cultivated site, and one from a native prairie site. Then we used one glyphosate-resistant soybean variety, one conventional soybean, and then the glyphosate was applied at the normal or label rate. So one of the criticisms is, well, you didn't use an isolate line that was the parent of the transgenic crop. Well, we just didn't have the seed, so we just went with a conventional variety. What was used for detecting IAA was an adaptation of a published method where one can have colonies transferred onto nitrocellulose membrane, as you see here, and then react it with the reagents. And as you see, you get this nice pink color, and that's an indication, it's a presumptive indication of endo-ulfuric acid production. With this, what we did was put this membrane over the culture plate as it was incubating, and then that kind of provides a template. You remove it, react it with the reagents, and then you make a count and compare that with the total rhizobacteria numbers. She also did follow-up confirmative tests using a colorimetric activity. That's why the microplate reader is there, I guess. For IAA concentrations, and then we also confirmed that with some HPLC work where we could identify the actual compounds. These are chemical properties of the soils that were used. The most striking features are the prairie soil. It's kind of a wet prairie, clay pan soil, so it retains a lot of water. You're going to see very low pH, very high organic matter compared to the cultivated soil. So the pH was adjusted upwards a bit for the greenhouse study, but the main effect here is going to be the organic matter content and the quality of that organic matter if we were going to see any effects with the rhizobacteria. Now, this is a whole table of analysis of variance data, but really what it shows is that for these properties, organic carbon, carbon dioxide evolution, total nitrogen and urease activity as an activity index, the biggest changes were with the soil. You know, we didn't see a whole lot of difference with the impact of the plants, soils and timing of sampling. And the same is true for total rhizobacteria that were detected, as well as the IAA-producing rhizobacteria. The largest impact that showed any differences was soil source. There wasn't any difference due to plant or any of those other interactions there. And really, when you look at the data, it's really nothing that stands out. These are total rhizobacteria populations in the prairie soil. And it's designated by whether we had the conventional variety, which is a white bar, Roundup ready crop or glyphosate resistant with no Roundup, or with Roundup or glyphosate. So there wasn't any difference in total numbers, and the same can be said for the cultivated soil, similar trend. You look at the IA producers, the only impact we had was for some reason at the last day we saw some lower numbers when you had the transgenic crop plus the herbicide. It seemed to be some effect at that point, but that was not seen in the cultivated soil. So the bottom line here was that the glyphosate-resistant soybean plus the glyphosate had little effect on the general microbial activity for the varieties under study. So you got to remember, this is one variety of the transgenic type soybean and one conventional variety. There are probably, since 1997, there are probably thousands of different varieties of especially the glyphosate-resistant soybeans. So, you know, the conclusions are probably limited at this point. There were few differences in the numbers of IA producing rhizobacteria, and that, you know, was obvious on these graphs that were presented. So where you would go from here is that, you know, numbers are fairly crude data, and whether we're seeing all, you know, everything that could be extracted culturally is obviously probably not true. So the focus should be more on what is going on with the diversity of the rhizobacteria in the rhizosphere, especially in the presence of glyphosate that is being released into the rhizosphere. And since then we've shown that there are some effects on the balance of the composition within the rhizosphere of these transgenic soybean, and also the function. You know, I mentioned that there was a wide difference in the production of IAA with these different species, even within species. So that would probably would be necessary to be looked at, looking at the actual concentrations of these metabolites that are produced that are affected by this chemical that is in the rhizosphere, as well as doing, you know, now that we have some molecular probes in the lab, we can go and look at that a little bit more closely and see if there is some differences in the genetic patterns as well. So with that, I will believe that's it. Thank you for your attention and your patience with my presentation.
Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Glyphosate, if you put it on soil, is totally inactivated. So if it's exuded from the rhizosphere into the roots, from the roots into the rhizosphere, it would seem to me would have a very limited opportunity to have any major effect, at least on the plant, but on the microbe community, probably limited as well.
That is true. The question is about the glyphosate immobilization in soils. We feel, I mean, we really haven't demonstrated, we can show this in hydroponics, of course, but that when it's in a water phase, maybe water films around the roots and the soil colloids, there's a greater opportunity for it to interact with the microbes. And then the other thing about it being immobilized in soils, some of the things that I think we've seen on some of the agricultural soils we have that has received a lot of livestock manure that's high in phosphorus. If you get those sites sorbed with fertilizer phosphorus and glyphosate being sorbed at the phosphate group is often does not have a lot of sites to sorb to the soil, so it can be more available than one might think.
Any other questions? Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. I want to